Into session, we still have our quorum. I don't think we've lost anyone, so we're eligible to continue conducting business. We'll move into the executive committee, and by way of introduction of those members, myself, Vice Chair Dr. Dennison, Academic Chair Dr. Bale, Finance Chair Gil Johnson, Student Affairs Chair John Ridley, and then Mr. David Porter serves as our ex officio member by reason of this illustrious past year as chair. We have one action item, but there will be another matter at the conclusion of the action item that I want to bring up by way of Senate referral, faculty Senate referral, and then, of course, an information item. This time I'm going to call on Dr. Ransdell, President Ransdell, to introduce and to lead us into our action item one.
I don't believe the board. Some of you may have met Mark Archibald over the course of the last few weeks in your individual engagement with the university, but officially welcome to Mark Archibald, Vice President for Development and Alumni Relations. He's been on the job for about 3 weeks now,
three weeks.
Comes to us by way of Utah Valley University, Harvey Mudd College, and Purdue University. And brings a terrific experience and knowledge and insight and capacity to his new duties with WKU as our Vice President for Development and Alumni Relations. And Mark will provide the report regarding approval of designated rooms. And it's all yours, Mark. Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you, President Ransdell. I have for the Regents' attention the list that you've received of the approval of designated rooms and areas. I'm happy to field any questions you may have about particular namings. But otherwise, we ask for approval of this list from the Regents.
And all of these are donor-related?
These are all donor-related. Contributions have been received for each of these naming requests.
I'll make a motion that we approve.
Second.
Motion for approval by Dr. Bale, seconded by Dr. Dennison. Open for questions or discussion. I would like to take this opportunity without embarrassing Regent Ridley, hopefully, that note that John and Carolyn are a donor, and that is a good wake-up sign for all of us to fulfill our Regents' duties by being charitable with the university, and I know we all are. But John and Carolyn, thank you, and appreciate what you do for the university.
I think I'll abstain from this.
Right, I'll vote twice.
All right, call the vote. All in favor of approval, aye. Opposed, no. Motion carries unanimously.
Thank you.
Sir, nice to meet you.
See how easy this stuff is, Mark?
That's so easy. I'll bring to more difficult things next time.
Before we go into information items, there's one other individual I would like to introduce to the board. She's been on the job for about 2 months, maybe. Andrea Anderson. Stand up, Andrea. Andrea is our Assistant General Counsel, and she's assumed responsibility for our Title IX coordination, which is a big job on any university campus, as it is on this one. And she also is responsible for our international documentation of foreign nationals on our faculty and staff, among other things as assigned by the General Counsel and any others of us who may have things that are legal in nature. So, Andrea, welcome. We're delighted to have you.
Before we go to the information item, I wanted to comment earlier this week I disseminated out to each of the Regents' exec committee and copied all the Regents on the receipt of a resolution presented by Regent Birch from the Faculty Senate Committee and then also a resolution submitted by Regent J. Todd Ritchie from the Student Government Association. When in receipt of those, they were forwarded to a parliamentarian, Dr. Randy Capps, and copied to our general counsel, Deborah Wilkins to address the appropriateness of board consideration of those resolutions. Those items were disseminated to you. Those items consisting of the resolutions, a copy of Dr. Camp's and Deborah's memorandum addressing the appropriateness of the board taking up matters for reconsideration, and finally a copy of our bylaws, which reference that we follow Robert's Rules of Order, and then also with respect to power delegated to our president for matters of contract execution. I think it's self-evident from those items that these are matters that are not within the board's purview at this point. And unless I hear an objection or other comment, propose that this matter is concluded and that we will move on now to our information item. Hearing none, Dr. Brian Meredith, would you present the enrollment management report?
Thank you. Regent Higgin, good to be back in front of everyone again.
He's smiling. That's a good sign, isn't it?
I don't know that I go through a half a day without someone saying, Meredith, how are those numbers? That's a way of life for the enrollment management folks. But before we get into the numbers, I think it's probably important and timely that I introduce Cindy Burnett here with our Director of Student Financial Assistance, Financial Aid and Scholarship Office. Comment made earlier, Cindy is our Grant Thornton, I guess, for enrollment management, since she has with all the federal loans, grants, state funding, institutional money, scholarships, all of that. You know, that's well in the neighborhood of probably about $200 million if you threw it all in, and that's an approximation. But keeping us on the upright and all right is no small task. And Cindy chaired the scholarship committee and has for a while, which is comprised of faculty and staff across campus. And somewhere around February of this past year, the president charged the scholarship committee to look at all things scholarship, and we did to touch all aspects of scholarship, look at retention, yield rates, enrollment rates, success rates, all those different things. And Cindy and the committee have done just a stellar job in a short amount of time since February. And I believe in your packet you may have the scholarship for 2016 and 17 for freshmen on one side and transfers on the other. So I've asked her to join us today. She doesn't get to come before the board a lot, but a very important piece to the enrollment management success team, and would like for her to talk us through and give us kind of a very briefing as best you can, because it's an elaborate program and a very competitive-based program on where we are with our university scholarship program, and then we'll ease into where we are right now with in overall enrollment.
Brian, one additional thought, which Cindy is probably expecting me to say, with the charge to come in under budget next year.
Yes, absolutely. That balance, the seven-month process balanced competitiveness with coming under budget, balanced that all in every conversation that we went through and every what if she proposed and projections and yields, that absolutely drove the process. So, yeah, very important.
Okay. As Ryan said, we evaluated trends. We looked at the trends GPA and ACT-wise in regards to students that we were applying for admission and then those students that we were yielding. We looked for areas where we're doing well and we're yielding students at a successful rate. And then we looked at areas where there was growth, room for growth, room for numbers, and room for expansion. Our task and our primary goal was kind of to create a model that's all things to all people. Look for a way to take a baseline budget and reach as many students as we can without asking for any increases or anything like that. And so with our model, we were looking at probably anywhere from 15 to 16 different tiers of types of scholarships that we offered as a university in the prior model. So one goal as well was to be create a much more simplified model and look at that collectively. And as Brian indicated, all scholarship programs are reviewed. There's not one that went untouched. From beginning freshman to transfer to Gatton, all of our different offerings that we did. And pretty much we our program in the past was a good model in that it met the charge that we were given. Our charge at that time was to raise our number of students at our top, our top performing students, and we did that. We did that well, which came with substantial cost as a result. So with the new model, we're basically taking our $20 bill and instead of giving it to one, finding a way to take $20 and give it to four. That's just kind of making it as simple as possible. But so what we did, if you look at the, I believe you have the card, let's kind of walk through the side that says 2016 scholarships for beginning freshmen. This goes into effect fall 2016. We've already began the recruiting season for that, and we're already starting the process. Students have been admitted, and we're in the process of offering scholarships as we speak. Our top level and our most prestigious award in the past was the Cherry Presidential. That remains our most prestigious scholarship offering. Those are competitively awarded, and this is an area where we have really made it in even a more selective process than it has in the past. In the top, with our Cherry Presidential and our Founders and the OWN model, we awarded usually 25 presidentials and about anywhere from overall in that next level, we could have up to 300 students competing in that area. This is an area where we will be very select. We will invite 45 students that are in that 3.831 GPA and ACT range to campus to compete for our presidential. They go through, in addition to applying for admission, they have different application materials that they must submit. From that group is we will invite them for an interview, and then they have an interview day and impromptu essays and additional information there. So 45 will be what we will actually bring to campus. The top 15 will be offered $16,000, and then the 30 finalists will be offered $12,000. To put that in perspective of where that is compared to the prior model, the prior model we pretty much had very specific. You would get tuition, housing, meals, and books for the presidential. Going forward with our new model, we're doing whole values. That way, if we do have a tuition increase and we feel budgetary-wise we can't sustain that increase with our scholarship volume, we have a little flexibility there. And $16,000 is very close to that value. And then the next level would be the $12,000. So in that shift, what we have done is tried to shift some of those resources then to the remaining populations. And that's where you look at the graph in the middle. Our academic merit awards, you can see, range from $1,500 to $8,000, and those are students with 3.3 GPA and 25 ACT all the way up. So we can have students with 3.8 and 31s that choose not to compete for the Cherry Presidential at all, and they would fall in that $8,000 range. What we are seeing from, especially from a financial aid side, because as Brian indicated, we're dealing with students that are not just relying on scholarships, but students that are relying on federal aid, federal grants, loans, state resources, and enrollment management, we see this as well. A lot of students that were having trouble meeting that shortfall were usually in that $1,500 to $2,500 range. So that was our goal, to see how could we fill in that gap for more students when we shifted these resources, and that was pretty much our goal there. In that $1,500 to $8,000 range, that is what we're looking at. All of these awards are four-year renewable, and assuming that they maintain the renewal GPA. That's another thing that we looked at. As I said, we probably had 15 different tiers of programs, many with different renewal GPAs, anywhere from 2.5 to a 3.5. With the new program, other than the Cherry Presidential, the renewable GPA criteria for that is a 3.4. All other awards will require a 3.0 renewal GPA. We're looking at yield percentages in this 3.3, 25 GPA and ACT range all the way up. It varies. We've broken it down per each grid, but usually on average we're yielding about 30 to 40% in the number of students that apply for admission that we actually enroll in those ranges historically in the past. And so that's kind of what we've built our model on. Then in addition to that, students that apply for admission by January 15th are also eligible to compete for what we're calling our targeted awards. With that addition, we try to look at areas we were already reaching. You know, for example, Governor Scholars. We already had an existing award program. We already had a program that was reaching students that were from TIP counties or non-resident students. And really what we wanted to do is have all students subject to the same academic merit model. And then from that, build supplemental awards for those special targeted areas. Before I leave the chart, I do want to tell you, with the shift and based on fall 14 data, we are estimating that more than 500 students that fall in these GPA and ACT ranges in that grid will receive a larger scholarship value in the new model than they would have in the older model, and that's the net result of that. Again, not for more money, but just within our shift, more that will receive an increase there. So then when we look at our targeted awards, the way the new model works is, say you have a student that qualified for the $8,000 award. They're getting that merit-based award. Then it may be that they participate in the GSA. That's the Governor's School for the Arts. If they come in with a 3.0 GPA, they're also going to get a $1,500 targeted award on top of that. And that's kind of the chart to the left there has the values and the different requirements there. With, again, based on Fall 14 data, we're projecting more than 100 students that will fall in this new model that will be offered an award. And then we also have the next one that you see there is our Cornelius A. Martin Scholarship. That's for eligible minority students. That was one of our tasks as well, to try to meet the needs of our underrepresented populations. And with the shift in the restructuring there, we're anticipating that more than 300-plus additional students will be awarded a scholarship in the new model with that. The other two, tuition incentive program and non-resident international, just to be clear, this does not impact students that live in TIP counties will automatically get the tuition incentive program tuition rate. That's not a scholarship program. This doesn't change that. What we had in the past is a scholarship program for those students in addition to getting the TIP rate. And so these values are less than what we've offered in the past. But we still think they're good enough that we will still be able to get those students and allow us to expand our reach a little more there. The non-resident international scholarship is for those students that are coming in from out of state, excluding living in a TIP county, or international. In the past, that was a program that was probably treated more like an entitlement program because at any time that they entered the university and they met the qualifications, they were eligible for that award. It was awarded year-round for winter, summer, fall, spring, and there was no application deadline or anything with that. In our restructuring, we felt like that is a scholarship program, so it needed to be treated as such. So students that are non-resident or international that have at least a 25 ACT and a 3.0 GPA will be held to an application deadline as well. That's another area where we could still provide a resource but kind of control expenses in that group. So then our final targeted award is our Gatton and Craft Academy. Historically, we had several tiers to a Gatton scholarship program, where depending on what the student's credentials were, what value they would get. In the new model, again, they'll be subject to the same baseline grid as any other student, but then by being a graduate of the Gatton College, they'll get that additional supplemental award on top of it. With the Craft Academy being new, we saw that as a market that maybe we could also provide a pretty good scholarship package and try to encourage some of those students to enroll here as well. So our beginning freshmen, you know, again, our task was to look at our areas for improvement. Where can we scale back a little with the end result of still not impacting negatively recruitment or retention, but still offer a competitive package that allows us to compete well with others. If you want to flip it to the back, this is our transfer model. And historically, as a university, we had a transfer scholarship offering for those that transferred from a KCTCS school. And that was it. It did not provide any scholarship opportunities for those that were transferring maybe from another school. You might have a student that went to UK one semester, two semesters, and decided that's not the school for them, and they really want to come to Western. They did not have any opportunities for scholarship at that time. So in this evaluation, we decided another area, since our transfer numbers are trailing pretty good, that was an area for growth. And so we decided to expand that model to include all transfers, not just KCTCS. So with the transfer model, effective fall 2016, any student that transfers in with at least 24 credit hours, be it from KCTCS or another school that in a regionally accredited school with at least a 3.5, then they'll be eligible for a scholarship at the $1,500 or $2,500 level. Again, these are annual awards. These awards are renewable for 2 years, whereas the freshman awards are renewable for 4 years or until they graduate, whichever occurs first. Similar mentality here with the transfer. We wanted a base model where all transfer students were subject to that base model, and then some would be eligible for a supplemental. And that's where the $1,500 comes in, and really to help us to continue to attract those KCTCS transfers. If a student transferred in from KCTCS with at least a 3.0, with that associate's degree completed, then they would get an additional $1,500 award. And that was to keep us still competitive with and maintain our KCTCS transfer volume. That was the primary changes. Something else that we have that is coinciding with this that we're very excited about is we have actually just launched last week a new scholarship portal. And so what we're wanting to do is, in addition to students depending on our university scholarships that we offer, we wanted to truly totally utilize our CHF and trust fund endowments in those scholarships. And we have always done a really good job with that in the past. But it was it was not as technical as it needed to be. This scholarship portal, and I think we're probably going to, provide additional information in the future regarding that. But it's important to mention with this because now when students apply for admission and we make a determination that they're scholarship eligible, we will then also be directing them into the portal. And it's really slick. A student can go in and, say I'm from Barron County. Are there any scholarships that are specific to students from Barron County? Are there any scholarships that are for a chemistry major? From a scholarship perspective, we have donors that, a lot of them will decide the criteria, what type of student they want to target. So that is a resource that's now available to students as well. And we think that'll go a long way because in addition to whatever we offer them as a university, then we will immediately send them into that portal so that they can see what those other scholarship opportunities are available. And that will be true for beginning freshmen, transfer, and returning students as well. It's also an opportunity where we'll be able to donor information, display donor information, and the student is kind of able to make that connection as well. So lots of things happening. As Dr. Ransdell indicated, absolutely our goal is to stay within budget. We are projecting what will happen. Obviously, we can't predict what will happen. The good in that, I guess, is in the event that we yield more students than we have projected, that means we have enrolled more students than we have projected. So in turn, if we are offering a $1,500 scholarship, we're bringing in a $9,482 tuition revenue. So the model is built on current student behavior, and it's not arbitrary. It is defined precisely per the grid where they fell and those kind of things. So we, we feel pretty confident about our projections. Now we gotta see how it plays out, see what students we actually yield and what students apply for admission and those kind of things. So that's the very tall summary there. Any questions on the model? I'm sure there will be.
The third guiding principle, other than containing cost, remaining competitive, the third one was we really need to address and invest our scholarship dollars into the middle here, the students here in the middle, of which also will feed retention long term. These are the students that we see in enrollment management where we are working with. They're great students, solid students, as you see GPAs and ACTs all through the chart, who just need a little bit of a little more push, a $1,200, $1,500 scholarship. And so we're trying to, again, feed that motivated middle or invest our resources within that what you see there in the chart. So that was the third component to guiding this change.
Okay.
couple of questions. Okay. I'm pleased to see something definitive for transfer students. And sometimes you can't win for losing because there's an upside and downside to that.
Mm-hmm.
The upside is that there is something for deserving transfer students. Did you have any concern about the possible downside that this looks like one of the few awards that doesn't have any ACT tied to it? And so the logical thing for a community college student to do is to pick up 24 hours and come in and get a scholarship, and then you don't have to deal with ACT. Is this likely to drive more students to take their work at the community college who might otherwise be successful here?
Yeah, we absolutely talked about that, because that is something that, from my standpoint, as a university, we have a returning student population as well that is of concern to us. And obviously a student that comes in and qualifies for a scholarship as a beginning freshman, has that opportunity. And probably one of the reasons that made us change our transfer scholarship was that exact reason, because we felt like our existing model, even as we had it, this, we hope, lessens that. Our existing model did provide a little incentive for a student to either come to Western and choose to leave, or choose to go to KCTCS school to begin with, get their two-year degree, and then transfer in. Our old model went down to a 3.0. So, and really in an effort to try to lessen that possibility, we changed that to a 3.5. And so what we have as part of our plan, this is phase one. We are hoping phase two can happen very soon. We also have a recommendation for a returning student model, so that incentive, we're trying to narrow that there by taking it away from a 3.0 to where you now have to have a 3.5. But then we also have a returning student model that will be forthcoming probably for 17-18 that we think will take care of that gap even further.
Students who come in who really they don't have high ACT GPAs, but who've demonstrated after
absolutely
a couple of years they
yes
really are good students and
yes
serious, there would be some option for them.
Yes.
You probably have a little less problem with this, since you say the associate degree has to be completed.
Yes.
And so many of those students do not complete it.
Yeah. And with this, we felt like what you mentioned is exactly the model we were in. Those students in that less than that 3.5 range, and with that 3.0, that, even though they may have completed an associate's degree, we felt a little injustice for those students that maybe didn't qualify coming in, because maybe they didn't have a good ACT score, but they've proven themselves at the college level in the classroom, and they're earning a 3.8, a 3.7, and so this was to kind of narrow that gap, but then also we think that when we're able to coincide and lay out a returning student program, that will take that incentive away altogether for them to go elsewhere. They will stay here because they have the potential for a scholarship here.
And in addition, the non-traditional student who goes to a KCTCS institution trying to earn their way back in, this gives them a way to pursue that baccalaureate degree. And you know my passion, my non-college ready students. I didn't pay attention in high school. I didn't do the work. I am now focused. I know the importance. It gives them a way to come back in, and just that little bit of help to get over the hump and come in here and finish that degree.
It does. It reaches over into other areas with our adult learners and other areas that we're trying to bring in as well.
One other question, Cindy. I probably didn't listen carefully, okay, but on the targeted awards, the two, the non-resident and the two academy wins, did I understand those are also competitive, selective, that you don't automatically get it, or do you automatically get it?
They get it if they apply for admission by January 15th.
Okay.
Where it is different, though, is that, like the non-resident international, in the past, they could enroll at any time. They could decide to come to Western in August, or July, and if they met our criteria in the old model, they would get that award. It is competitive, more competitive than it was, but they have to apply by January 15th to get it. If they apply by January 15th and they meet the criteria, then they will receive the award. But if they apply after, and something else that is probably a good time to point that out, another piece to this model that we've not had in the past that we wanted in the current model. Obviously, we have to have a deadline. Apply by that date so that we can do those evaluations. But we see a lot of students that maybe Western doesn't get on their radar till February or March, or they went all through their junior and senior year knowing they were going to go to one school, but then they changed their mind. We don't want to lose those students. And so what we will be doing is January 15th will be a point where we solidify the awards that we have for those that have applied prior to that point. We will also do another sweep May 15th of anyone that has applied after January 15th that is scholarship worthy. They meet any of our criteria. And then at that point, we will be able to see where we are, because typically the standard date to accept scholarships is the end of April. So we'll have a good idea of what our acceptance rate is. We can project what we think our yield rates will be, and then we'll have an opportunity to possibly offer awards to those that applied late. We'll do another sweep July 15th. They will not be guaranteed an award, but we will consider them, at least review and see if we have opportunity. It may be that it's not a WKU scholarship. It may be that we find a trust fund award that we're able to meet those students' needs. But that's an area as well in the past that we've not been able to address at all, but with the new model we will be able to.
And I would underscore that the College Heights Foundation and Donald Smith's staff have walked with us through this, and Donald's part of the committee, with his top dollar scholarship source and Porter's portal, has been very helpful in helping couple some of this and some ways loosely do some financial leveraging with
that. Yes, it's live. Go out there. Take a look at it. You can put in anything you want to put in, and it'll show you scholarship opportunities, donors, and all of that.
And it auto-matches. If you fill out the application, you don't have to know what you qualify for. It will take your information and let you know what's out there that you're eligible for. And that's powerful, because students don't know what to search on, nor do first-generation parents. So this brings all the information in one place. I fill out one application, and everything, my Girl Scouting, my fishing club, whatever it is that donors put in their requirements for that scholarship, auto-matches, and the student is made aware of it.
This last 2 weeks, I've had the good fortune to speak to the senior classes at our four Warren County high schools and the Bowling Green High School. And the guidance counselors are receiving this very well. And just this week, Brian and Jason, perhaps others, have spent a lot of time this week visiting with school administrators, guidance counselors, and others across a broad range of schools that serve us well in the prospective student market. So, Brian, any observations on how this is being received in the high schools?
Very positive. Monday we were in 10 or 11 high schools, and the guidance counselors, principals, and staff, they were very pleased to see this, particularly Charge here in the middle. They're very pleased and understood it as well, understood the nature of where we're trying to go with this, and have generated a lot more interest, where they now want to bring further groups to campus that they may not have wanted to do before. They'd like the presidents to come in and speak to their senior class, which we'll line up and have that happen, and such a trickle effect.
Questions from Regent Ridley, Regent Jay Ritchie, and now Dennison. So, Ridley, I think you're up.
Well, first, I'd like to thank you for taking a small amount of fishes and loaves and dividing it among. And I say that with all candor and seriousness. As someone who would have not completed WKU unless those types of things would have been available in 1971, this is extremely important. Extremely important. And the ability for someone who is not schooled in how those things operate to have this integrated source to be able to say, my fishing club has a scholarship of $75, to be able to access that for a mom or a single parent, that's, to me, is, again, right to what we're all about. As a comment, too, earlier of the contribution that you mentioned, I do think it's very important to realize that that opportunity, even though there was a naming opportunity there, was not the driving factor that Carol and I made that decision. It's because the underlying process of that established a scholarship for an honor student. And I think that needs to be mentioned. It was not necessarily, it was the underlying scholarship that brought our attention to that program. So that's available for many others. So I do think if you explore it, you will see that that opportunity is a twofold. So thank you very much.
Regent Richie?
Sir, we've had people come to the Student Government Association and ask why we changed the scholarships, and I have to just tell them that we have this new program, but that's not what the Student Government Association handles. Just three really brief questions for clarification. Did you say the scholarship portal is up now?
Yes.
Okay, good.
Yes.
And the operating budget is still the same from last year, except
correct.
Now the quantity is different. Is that
correct?
That, okay.
We're just redistributing the loaves.
Good. All right, just making sure. And then students ask this a lot. The ACT score that's required, is that composite or is that cumulative? Like their four best scores.
It's not super scored. It's the composite scores. You're referencing
okay.
super scored.
Super
yes.
scored, yes.
Sometimes they'll want you to take the highest score of each category yes. and that, but it's the composite score.
Okay. Thank you very much.
I will say that we are, that is another thing that we have recognized as something that some schools are doing. So, again, after our end of May deliberations and end of April, and we know where we are. We are looking at students that did not qualify based on composite but would have qualified on super score, and we're going to see if there's any opportunities for foundation or other awards that we might be able to reach out to those with.
Thank you.
I got to see the scholarship portal at an Ogden college meeting, and it is, Donald Smith has really worked hard on it. It is very, 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 it's going to help a lot of kids. It's very, very good. How many Cherry Presidentials do we currently have? We're going to go down to 45.
Well, in a year, for the freshman class, we would have offered 25 in the old model.
In the old model. So we're actually going to have more.
Mm-hmm. No, we will offer
15.
We will offer 15 at the top level.
Okay.
Where we've really shaved is that next level. For those that were still in those GPA and ACT ranges that did not receive the top award, you know, we had probably 300 in a class, but we will have 30 in that next level. And to put the values on it, the Cherry Presidential in the old model was probably came in at 17,000 plus. The new model will be 16. Most of these students, in-state students in those ranges, are going to have a key scholarship that is going to fill that gap already. So we felt like that was an opportunity for us to shift a little bit. But, you know, $1,000 for one student that we take away might save another student. And so that's where a lot of our shift came, was at the top. But in the sense that a lot of those top students will be getting outside scholarships, key scholarship, maybe even trust fund scholarships. So we're shifting more to the group that sometimes is left out in the scholarship model. So
the 45 figure recent Regent Denison is how many we would interview.
Correct.
In that day.
15 will get the top level, and 30 would get the 12,000.
Okay. So 30 will get the 12,000. So when you say cost of attendance, that's tuition and room and board?
Yes, and probably let me explain that. I should have explained that when I was going down through there. Currently, cost of attendance is pretty much a federal number that we have federal regulations that drive a cost of attendance value, and that is what we use to award federal aid packages, some federal state aid packages, and it includes tuition, housing, meals, books. It also includes a component for personal and transportation, and so currently, any Title IV aid recipients, which is usually your federal grants and loans, or state aid recipients, are held to cost of attendance. So regardless of what their total package is, if it includes any federal aid, we have to cap them at cost of attendance. Athletes, for example, if they're receiving athletic aid and other aid, we have to cap them at cost of attendance. And so that's not a new concept. It's a little new for scholarship-only recipients. But this is kind of in the industry. Schools have gone back and forth. It used to be schools did cap, and schools moved away from capping. And then as budgets get tight, they cap again. So what that means is, I'll give you an example. An in-state undergrad, dependent res, probably 20,000 would be their cost of attendance. That that includes tuition, housing, meals, books, and those other components. So that student's total aid package cannot exceed $20,000. So if they're going to get an $8,000 academic merit award and a $1,500 GSA award on top of that, that's $9,500. Then it may be that they're getting a Pell Grant. It may be that they're getting an external scholarship. What we will be doing is, instead of letting those students just have those funds excess in residual funds, we will cap it at cost of attendance. So if their total package is over the $20,000 and they have a merit-based award as part of that, we will reduce that merit-based award. So they're and keep in mind, cost of attendance exceeds the cost of what they're going to have to pay. Cost of attendance, if they're living on campus, they would have tuition, housing, meals, and books. But then that cost of attendance includes a component for personal expenses, includes a component for transportation expenses. So we're still allowing even that leverage in there, but we won't exceed the $20,000. And we have some that does happen, because they've done a good job in getting external scholarships. They're getting a large scholarship here. And in the past, they may have been able to keep all of those funds. But we felt like, to be good stewards of our money, if they exceed that cap, then we're already doing it for federal aid recipients. We're already doing it for athletes, so we would do it for the entire population.
In that regard, Melissa, Todd just made a note. It would probably be prudent for Todd to make a report at our December committee meetings and the executive committee on how Intercollegiate Athletics is dealing with the cost of attendance. That's maybe single most, the single largest change that's taking place in Intercollegiate Athletics these days is how athletic scholarships are now reflecting total cost of attendance and how that's calculated. So you may need to be part of that presentation too, but she's got to calculate what he offers, as does every financial aid officer at every institution, and it varies and it's complex, and I think this board would do well to understand the calculations that will follow in offering full cost of attendance to athletes beginning next year. So Todd, you'll make that note for our December committee meetings.
Regent Smith?
Yes, and it sounds like, I mean, y'all have done an amazing job with a very daunting task, because you said all things to all people. However, I just want to clarify, for this year, it's my understanding there's still not a cap on how much can be awarded to for the overall program. You could still go over budget. Is that correct? And then next year there would be a cap? I think I heard that somewhere.
Well, the way it works is, I guess it kind of goes back to, we can project what we can't predict. We build our scholarship offerings based on prior year yield. For example, for incoming freshmen, we're looking at what percentage we're yielding per scholarship type. Then we're also looking for students that are already on the scholarship that are receiving a renewable, at what rate are we retaining those students. So we have a pretty complex budget model where we're looking at, what percentage we will yield, what percentage we will retain, and what we estimate our cost will be. Going into this year, we estimated that our cost would be up. Of course, some of those factors that come into play is tuition goes up, housing goes up, meals go up. So our when we're doing renewable scholarships and they've been tuition specific or had a housing or meals component to them, when those expenses, when those charges go up as a university, likewise our scholarship expenses go up as well. And so right now, what we estimated our budgetary needs would be for this current year, we look at it periodically. We looked at it a little while back, and we're getting ready to do another sweep and evaluate that data as we're approaching the census date. But we feel like I don't have a sense that we're going to be over budget. When we say we were going to be over, our needs for this fiscal year were greater than what our needs were for last year. And that was just because we yielded more students in these top scholarships. And as a result, we're probably bringing in more tuition revenue in that group, just for the pocket of students that are in these GPA and ACT ranges. So,
but you are capping that second level, which was not the case last year.
Yes. To partially answer Dr. Smith, there are caps in the top level and the second level where that had not happened historically.
I think one point that may not have surfaced in this discussion, it's going to take a while to realign on the program aspects. We made an obligation to those students based on different criteria and removal. So we have 3 years of students that came in under a different program. We're going to work them through, and then what you're talking about is a new program for the entering freshmen. So I've heard someone say, oh, so the scholarship budget's not going to go up next year. Yes, it will go up next year. We have an obligation for 3 years of returning students to honor the fact that when our tuition goes up, our housing goes up, our meals, they are receiving those awards that the university does adjust their award package. So it's going to take a little while for that the new criteria and obviously for counselors to understand it and articulate it well, and it's going to take a while for the entire program to get where we'd like it to be.
Yeah, and our sense is the next 2 years, this model is very conservative in regards to at the top level, and we're hoping to expand where we bring in a student that gets a $1,500 scholarship or $2,500 scholarship, but at a minimum are getting $9,482 in tuition. But we know that we've had to be more conservative with our freshman awards because of the level of renewables that we're carrying. But as those students graduate, that's why we already have our plans for phase two, that we're hoping we have expansion opportunities once we get past that growth.
Yeah.
Growth is good, but it cost us.
Any other questions or comments?
So did I understand then that phase two would be implemented as this three-year rolling number rolls out? You'll be implementing it,
phase two has been talked about in theory, but we haven't determined. We've got to see how this plays out because we've changed so many things around. And like I said, we've got our projections, but we've got to see how it actually impacts the numbers that we bring in that apply, the numbers that we yield. Certainly, we see potential for increase. We got to see if that happens in numbers. And then every year we do a analysis of our budget and what we feel our renewable volume will cost, and then what we feel we have available for first year awards. The problem is you don't know what that current year is because you're already starting the recruiting year for where you already have to have a program in place. So we started these discussions for 16-17 quite a while back. We had to look at 14-15 data. For phase two, we'll have to look at 15-16 data and 16-17 to really see the shift from where we were to the new model and kind of see how that plays out. But we already know that when we went in this and we evaluated every scholarship program from every aspect. We already know where we felt like our deficiencies were and what we were able to address now and what we feel we hope to address in the future. And so that's the part of phase two that we already have our list going on, is what we feel to really close some of the gaps. We feel that phase two needs to happen.
So
as soon as possible.
From my knowledge, just mine, you're actually 1 year lag with the four-year rolling numbers, what you're dealing with. So
yep.
We need to remember that when we sit down and discuss this next year.
This hasn't happened. Yes.
Exactly. Those will be 1 year lag with the four-year roll.
Yes.
Got it.
Right.
Thank you.
Yep. Any other comments?
Yes. Dr. Ansdell did a good discussion with this, with the University Senate. And
well, not as good as this one.
Not, well, depends on which end you were on. He did okay. I didn't mean it quite that way, but you did. A couple of questions came up that I don't expect you to have an answer to, but I'd like to at least raise it and hope maybe it's something you'd look at and we could look at. One thing that was very surprising in that discussion was that most faculty were seemed really surprised that we have so little university money that goes to needs-based. Mm-hmm. That was a real surprise. And I think, Gary, you said maybe it was 1.3% of 20 million or 22 million or something like that. So that has really generated quite a bit of discussion, given that we have an awful lot of students. How can you translate to the students you're trying to attract a scholarship program where you have to define mm-hmm. the merit base, but how do you also not, how do you send the message of what we can do as an institution in addressing needs based? So
I can answer that, actually.
Okay, good. Yes, there's a second question, but go ahead.
Because I live that every day. I'm on the scholarship side, but we're administering high need, high eligible. We are a very high Pell school. Those are our neediest students that qualify for state grants, federal grants, and we're probably the highest state utilizer of our state grant. And so we have a high need population. We are meeting some of those needs in a more indirect way, not in a marketable piece that we put out on our website or in a piece that we're doing. But the way that we're meeting that is any student that is not able to pay their bill, for example, our office, combined with the Billings office, we are doing diligent effort where we are hands-on every student that has not been able to pay their bill. We're looking at them individually to see if are there other federal aid sources, state aid sources that they have not taken advantage of that they can, and trying to reach out to them and encourage them, this is what you need to do so you're not in a situation where you can't stay. In some instances, we're a Band-Aid, but that's what we're doing. In other instances, if it's a situation where a student has maxed out, there's nothing else that's available, the resources that I'm familiar with in our office, then we're reaching out to EM and saying, all right, here's a need for discretionary. So we do meet some need-based needs. It's not in a apply and you will automatically get. It's almost more reactive. And so I agree. I think with our population that we have, that is certainly that when the luxury allows us to do that, that is something as well that
and
we need
to address. And that is great that you're doing that. I guess a lot of those students, though, may never overcome because they don't see that on the front end. I think we are a campus that's sensitive to need space, and a lot of students come and are going to need it. And my question is just how are we communicating?
Yeah. Fall in these grids, yes.
How much federal money do we utilize in a given year for need-based aid?
Oh, I would have to look. I mean, we are anywhere from well over a third of our population are Pell Grant eligible. I mean, a third of our students. And so, they're receiving undergrad Pell Grant. And then we also have students that may not be receiving Pell Grant, but they're receiving need-based loans.
So 50 million?
So our Pell Grant is what?
Oh, I mean,
our students will receive $50 million a year from federal money?
Oh, yeah. I mean, yeah.
$75 million?
They're receiving $30 million probably in Pell,
Which is probably important to figure out a way to get there.
So we could put some facts together on that.
Philosophically and really generally speaking, and I said this to the Senate a week or so ago, in higher education, typically the state and the federal government have the primary responsibility for need-based aid, and institutions have the primary responsibility for merit-based aid, and there are exceptions all over the place to those rules. But generally speaking, that's how the whole financial aid and scholarship dynamics flow together.
Yes, although we do see routinely from that's how the model has been, but then a lot of times there that question does arise, well, then what are institutions doing? We provide that data on a lot of reports where we're looking at that for each report it depends on how they want it. Sometimes they're just looking at freshmen, sometimes they're looking at all populations. But we are a campus that is a high, we have a lot of students with high need. So.
One final comment. Excellent presentation. I'm going to turn to Regent Ridley and say, do you think this will rival something that Academic Affairs would have put out on their program?
I would hope.
Okay.
before we close, since Jay Todd and Philip and Melissa, I also visited Greg Crane High School and Glasgow High School senior classes in the last couple of weeks and spoke with them as well. So just in case you were keeping score.
I was waiting.
Thank you. Yeah, okay. All right. I want to brag on Cindy. Cindy, we're very fortunate. I don't know all of the financial aid directors at the other institutions in Kentucky, but what I do know is we've got the best one. She's highly respected among her colleagues, among the eight universities in Kentucky, and has clearly arisen to that level of the voice of knowledge and reason among that group, and that's a reputation that we enjoy. So well done, Cindy. And one final thing. We've wrung our hands a good bit over $3.8 million overspending last year on scholarships, and we all understand the implications of that. However, as I've indicated in my convocation remarks a month or so ago, on the other hand, Audra Jennings, I spoke with Audra Jennings just this week, a couple nights ago. She's the Director of Office of Scholar Development. She shared with me that never have we had a freshman class, an incoming class, so capable and so well prepared to compete for the major national and international prestigious scholarships. That's what we are now enjoying with the class that just started in August of this year. Because we had a 30% increase in the number of scholarships that were awarded, that allowed us to bring in the most talented, intellectually capable class we've ever admitted. And, for example, and I don't know how many of these are freshmen versus upperclassmen.
Right.
We didn't get into that. We have 32 candidates for Fulbrights this year.
Mm.
We've never had the highest high water mark was about 20 last year. So that's the flip side of overspending on your scholarship budget. The talent and the quality that it brings should not be overlooked.
Which is also a very strong recruitment tool.
Yeah, it is.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks, everybody. Good questions.
Enrollment.
Well, the question that's always on everyone's mind or top of mind is enrollment and where we are with enrollment. You have, I believe, in front of you, the IR report generated this week, and the magic number as of Monday of this week. We are at total enrollment of 20,146. Notice we're comparing that with fall 14 census data as our demarcation point, so we know where we are and where we're going. I say, different regions have asked me, do I have good news? I would say, yes, modest good news. And the only reason I qualify that by modest is just my conservative nature. So, but we are up, slightly up in first time, new freshmen and, as well as new transfers. As both of those are, the new freshman number is driven from the major overhaul and change and reapproach to marketing and recruitment that Dr. Lux and the admissions team and the campus in general, as everyone has stepped up to this process to help us recruit. Just some salient points here that I'll talk through, and then we can come back to any questions you may have. As the president had noted, the academic quality of this class remains strong with ACT scores, average ACT in 23 and high school GPA of 327. If we go into more of a performance-based approach and analysis of things now and in the future, the number of students coming to us with developmental courses at the time of admission has dropped from 2010 to 2014 by 29%, 29.6% actually, and that's following suit and being good stewards of Senate Bill 1, which charged us a few years ago to increase the number of high school graduates who are college-ready. 50% of our first-time, first-year students earned college credit before entering WKU. That's not a small data point to miss. That's driving some of these classifications as well and moving people to graduation at a little faster pace. As I say, in 2007, you had 10 that are coming in for sophomores. Now we're looking at well over, 117, and those numbers that are rolling into that sophomore category classifications happening at a faster rate again. Again, back to circle back just to performance measures, because I think that's just becoming ever so important. The 4-year graduation rate has risen from 21% in 2010 to 30% in 2015, where we are now. The average time to complete a baccalaureate degree for those baccalaureate seeking students has gone down to 4.2. The Kentucky's 15 to finish initiative, which we are absolutely engaged in, seems to be working, and the 6-year graduation rate's a little over 51%. I mention all these dynamics about graduation, performance, and quality because that affects this whole total profile of where we are as we're coming in here beyond just the new freshmen and transfers. Out-of-state recruitment efforts, as you follow on the IR report, continue to remain steady. You'll see some positives there on the back side of the chart where our out-of-state enrollment is trending upward. Tennessee and Illinois are states that are certainly salient. I wouldn't might want to be remiss at not mentioning those. Tennessee was interesting, too, because we're competing with the Tennessee Promise Scholarship, which is a good program for Tennesseans. But they're still coming to us, particularly out of Middle Tennessee and with our joint admission partner partners there. Also, transfer enrollment. This is another interesting point, I think, feeding this class. From out-of-state and Kentucky four-year public schools remain steady. You see that on the top left of the chart from Kentucky KCTCS, out-of-state, four-year, and others trending in a very positive direction. You may say, well, those aren't large numbers, but that is an absolute start to momentum that I think is going to continue down the road as we as these recruitment efforts pay off. The overall assessment or kind of where do we go now and what if is retention provides our greatest opportunity for enrollment growth, and it's retention across the board. I think this some that may see that it's freshman, sophomore, continuing freshman, but it's across the board, and there's a lot of different factors in that. And I do absolutely would like to bring to the board a what we're doing with retention in October at a very near board report to show you, because there's a lot of good things going on campus that are helping to try to turn and curb that number. But right now, I would say as well, you've heard us report in the past about the traditional versus non-traditional byproduct of lowering employment rates and the economy and improving the traditional numbers, showing some positives, and non-trads are reflecting, you know, what you would see with the economy, with people returning back to work. So those are just some high points of that. I don't know how much on the back of all this information you need or want further on, but that's where we are, 20,146. Somewhere along the way, I said that those new numbers, those entering freshmen and transfer numbers, would probably be up plus or minus, you know, 1% or so, 1.5%. I never quoted an actual number in that, but, you know, you see a fluctuation of plus or minus 1%, and right now it's holding at the positive. So that is a snapshot as of this week compared to census year 2014. This report, these numbers will continue to evolve, and we have bi-term out there and some other things that will drive that. So our high school dual credit enrollments are growing. That feeds recruitment long-term. But that's where we are with enrollment management. There's no 2 days alike, and really, for that matter, no two classes and two cycles alike. And I just cannot emphasize enough the efforts, particularly for the new freshmen and the new transfers to us, new first-time freshmen and entering transfers. The admissions, marketing, recruitment efforts over the last 15 months have been very aggressive and are driving that, and that's just begun a very positive momentum that we're confident we're going to continue to see over time. So those are just some initial briefing remarks on enrollment from enrollment management.
Question, Ms. Regenberg?
You're going to shoot me when I ask this, and I must be missing something. When I look at the lines up at the top, I mean, it looks like we're up, Brian, but when I'm looking over here at fall census for 2015 as of 9/19 compared to 10/24/2014, I'm just struggling to figure out how we're up. We've got, everybody's got to be undergraduate or graduate, and the fall undergraduate number is lower for 15 than 14. And the fall graduate number is lower for 15 than 14. I'm trying to figure out how we're up. What am I missing?
The combination of factors there with the continuing freshmen, and then we started in 2014 with a lower number in the class, and then the retention factors that have rippled from that. Those are immediate responses.
But that's 17,449 and 2,697. For 2015, that does represent our total population, right?
Mm-hmm.
Which is less than the total a year ago. And so I'm struggling with how we are up. Where are they?
We're down 32.
We're down
32.
Okay, so we're down 32. Great. Okay. Then how does that include the dual credits?
Mm-hmm. It's all in, everyone from academy to everybody, graduate, undergraduate, international, everyone.
Let me try to take a stab at that a little bit, Barbara. I'm looking at about half a dozen numbers on here that I think are the key numbers for the board to be aware of and understand. First, the fall 2014 census. That was our final census number last year, and that's what we track against. And you know what? When the final census number is in late October next month, that's what we'll be tracking for next year's class to measure against that number. Now, the key thing that I think you need to understand is of the 20,146 as of the 19th of September, we will go through the drop for non-payment period over the next couple of weeks. We reference that. We'll be working one-on-one with every individual who has not yet paid their bill. Now, there will be some students that we'll discover did not show up in the first place. They registered, they haven't paid anything, and they may not even be here. We'll determine that number, and then we'll determine at the final census date just how many, and there will be a few hundred, that will be in that drop for non-payment category, and we'll be able to put some of them on payment plans, other strategies, and it might be a matter of just a few hundred dollars. We're going to work through one-on-one, but that will change that number. The 2014 final census number reflects the completion of that drop for non-payment period.
Yes.
So there's a lot of flexibility in these numbers over the next few weeks. The second thing is, Barbara, I think this begins to get to your point. Look over on the classification, other freshmen. That's where the retention comes in. Freshmen who were freshmen last year who didn't come back. Or who would be still in that freshman classification. Sharon, am I describing that correctly? That down 166 reflects retention.
One small tweak to that, if I may. The 166 that were down, you heard Dr. Meredith talk about 117 students who came in as sophomores or juniors in this year's class. They would never be a freshman to be compared to last year's freshman. So when you look at that sophomore number going up, our students are better prepared. They're coming in as second semester freshmen, most of them, as a minimum. By the time they get to spring, they're a sophomore. By the time they get to that second fall, they could be a first semester junior. That 4.2 years average to graduation, they're clipping right through. When I came through back in the dark ages, students were here for 4 or 5 years. You know, on the five-year plan, we had them for that extra year, extra revenue. Now students and families are focused, as are we, on making sure that they get through this journey as quickly as possible. So that's one thing. The other thing that is interesting is in fall of 2010, we had 61 students who graduated 4 years on time, out of here, out of our enrollment figures. This fall, we're looking at 235 fewer students being enrolled because they are graduating on time. We are doing some amazing things. Our retention is actually fairly stable, but it's the fact that we are getting them in better prepared. We're getting them into the classes they need. They're coming out of here in 4.2 years. They're taking an average of 29.7 hours per year. 30 hours a year will get you out of here in 4 years with 120 hours. We have some additional areas in retention I think we could better address. Need is one of them, getting to those students early. Making sure we have sufficient academic support, making sure they're engaged social. I'm not making friends, I'm not in an organization. Those things we can impact, and we can bump those numbers up with a little more hard work. And I think that's what Dr. Meredith was alluding to when he talked about our retention presentation.
They're bringing in so many more hours. And Dr. Ransom met a student recently with, 60 hours?
I met my first student a week before last. Warren Central High School graduate. She will graduate from Warren Central High School this May, and she will simultaneously complete her associate's degree as a high school senior and enroll as a full-time junior here next year, having completed her high school degree and her associate's degree simultaneously. Pretty impressive. To speak to Sharon's point, the line that says senior down 127, because more students are graduating more quickly, and that's a good thing, but it shows up as a negative on this sheet. And Barbara mentioned the high school students. You see, we're up 175. We're up now over 1,800 high school enrollments, and that's a good thing. These are students taking dual credit while they're still in high school, and because that number is getting to that point, just this past week, I appointed a recruitment work group
for dual credit
of several individuals to recruit these students with abandon, because we're enrolling about 60% of these, and I want them all. And there's no reason why a student who's already enrolled with us as a high school senior shouldn't be enrolling here full-time once they graduate from high school, but they're being recruited by everybody, but we want them all. So we put a work group together just to target that population. The other thing is, Brian mentioned South Central Kentucky Community and Technical College. And this goes back to another point you made a little earlier, Barbara. More students, primarily because of price point, will go to KCTCS, particularly local students going to Sky CTC, South Central Kentucky Community Technical College, because it's 60% of our price point,
yes,
approximately. And so they'll go there, but we got to get them on the transfer, on the rebound, so to speak. When they and that number is from 59 to 93, the number of students transferring in from our community college here in Bowling Green. So that's a significant number to track. Brian mentioned the Tennessee Promise. The Tennessee Promise is the new scholarship program in Tennessee that allows Tennessee high school graduates to attend a community college in Tennessee for free. It just started this year. Most universities in proximity to Tennessee are down in their Tennessee enrollments because of that, including four-year public universities in Tennessee. Mm-hmm. We're not. Our number is up, which is completely against the grain of what most institutions were expecting to find as a result of that Tennessee Promise program going into effect this year. So I'm delighted that we're up 42 in Tennessee enrollments at 1,517. That's a significant positive variable for us. So if you want to really get quickly to the bottom line, just go to the bottom of the right-hand side of the page, undergraduate age, traditional under 25, non-traditional over 25, age 25. We're up 226 traditional age. We're down 236 non-traditional. And again, that's the pattern that we've been addressing as aggressively as we can possibly address it over the last year or two. But now we've hired Brad Kissel. You met him at our board meeting, our last meeting. He's addressing that adult learner market in a very assertive way. And we intend to affect that. The final thing I'll say is our international recruitment strategies are in effect, and we just had a team go to a major recruitment event in India, and our graduate studies office, Scott, is working as aggressively as we possibly can in changing and adapting our graduate recruitment model. And we've got, I won't say a number, but we got a significant pool of new candidates to enroll in January from India, mainly in computer science and engineering technology management. Is that the right department? That look to be coming in mid-year from India in that international marketplace. And so a lot of strategies are in play to address, and these will all be full-paying students who won't be coming in expecting a graduate assistantship. That's a big variable in the graduate recruitment marketplace. So a lot of things are in play that are outside our norm, historically speaking, but are very much going to be part of our norm going forward.
You know, it's interesting to note, it's sort of you're darned if you do and darned if you don't. The student center with more hours already completed. They're better prepared. They're getting out quicker. And a few years ago had to drop the hours to graduation for a degree in many areas. So everything says that with these things happening, you're either going to have to find a lot more students from somewhere of a different type or you're going to be a smaller institution.
Exactly. No, you're exactly right, and we don't intend to be a smaller institution, but new markets new populations, new opportunities is what we are aggressively pursuing in order to sustain a stable enrollment and not become a smaller institution. But, you know, the demographics are shifting of high school populations in Kentucky and across the United States for a period of another 6 or 8 years when you talk to the demographers who track such things. We've got to offset that. It takes a lot of growth in new full-time students to offset the retention losses and the quicker graduation of seniors. It puts a lot of pressure on our enrollment management teams, but they're getting after it.
That's a good place to point out the transfer model, with us being down in the non-traditional students. In our old transfer model, and that was another reason for one of those changes, and, you know, it was just for those students that transferred in from KCTCS with an associate's degree. With this model, they can transfer in. They may have went to school when they were, you know, 20 years ago, and then now decide they want to come to Western. They wouldn't have had an opportunity for a scholarship before, but if they did okay then and they just never finished, then they would be subject to that base model.
But that they would have to have done it in the last 2 years.
No, that's for the supplemental. That's for the target. They would be eligible for the base award. So.
Trying to work.
Anything else? Thank you. Thank you. Well done. Agree. Unless Julia tells me different, that concludes our agenda for today. Thanks to everyone. Stand adjourned.